Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now here's, I suppose we're turning neatly to an item where we have to hope that this man's bark is worse than his bite, because US President Donald Trump has again threatened to announce separate tariffs on semiconductor and pharmaceutical imports within the next week or so, and made particular mention of Ireland in doing so during an interview with CNBC. Here's some of what he had to say.
They make a fortune with pharmaceuticals, and they make our pharmaceuticals in China and Ireland and everything else. And within the next week or so, we're going to be announcing tariffs on specifically. This is a, you know, this is a separate class than the 15% tariffs on sort of everything. These are excluded classes, I call them. I like to call them excluded, like steel, aluminum, et cetera.
Right, the 232.
Well, we're going to be announcing on semiconductors and chips, which is a separate category. But on pharmaceuticals, we'll be putting a initially small tariff on pharmaceuticals. But in 1 year, one and a half years maximum, it's going to go to 150%, and then it's going to go to 250%, because we want pharmaceuticals made in our country.
All right, 250%. Simon Marks is chief correspondent with Feature Story News. He joins me on the line now. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Colm.
Let's start with I suppose people will find a fairly grim news there. Donald Trump saying pharmaceuticals and semiconductors will be the next industries targeted in the latest round of tariffs. And that's despite the EU claiming that it had agreed a 15% tariff cap on medicines. Can you give us a bit of clarity on what we know, what gave rise to these latest comments by Donald Trump?
Well, in a sense, there's nothing new about his strategy here. It's the numbers that are so eye-watering that he laid out there for CNBC yesterday, because the president has made it clear that the 15% tariff contained in the agreement that he struck with Ursula von der Leyen a few days ago was never going to apply to pharma. He's always indicated that he was going to treat pharmaceuticals differently. We still don't know when he says that he's going to start off by unveiling a relatively smaller rate. I mean, obviously higher than the 15%, but not as high as the 150% that he says he'll go to in a year's time. We don't know what that rate is going to be, but you know, he's like a dog with a bone over this issue. And I think that what we have witnessed in the last few days is Donald Trump moving into a new phase of his global trade war. When you see, for example, the way in which he completely burnt his bilateral relationship with the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi last week, accusing India of engaging in obnoxious trade barriers that were shutting out American industry and American goods and damaging America's national security. I think it's become clear that even valued relationships on a geostrategic level are not getting in the way of his absolute zealous intent to protect American industry and try and force manufacturers to rebase themselves here in the United States. And on pharma, he is absolutely like a dog with a bone, absolutely determined that the pharmaceutical industry needs to stop manufacturing in places like China and Ireland, of course, and instead start building facilities here. So, you know, whether he gets to that absolutely eye-watering number of 250%, I think is still obviously very much in doubt, but he seems very serious about imposing very significant tariff duties on pharmaceutical exports from Ireland and other countries into the United States pretty quickly.
All right. And as you say, what the rate is going to contribute to the uncertainty that's currently being felt. But the Trump White House initiated new investigations into the import of pharmaceuticals under Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act. We heard that mentioned in the interview with CNBC. The purpose of these investigations, is it to determine the effects of imports on US national security and whether certain imports impair national security? I mean, do we know, firstly, what they're looking at and when we might find the findings of that investigation?
Well, I think you'll find the findings are published once they start unveiling these tariffs, and previous language used to justify previous Sector 232 reviews that the administration has already gone through looking at other products indicates that it is highly likely that the White House is indeed going to declare pharmaceutical imports into the United States a national security threat. I mean, he's justifying a host of these punitive duties on national security grounds. Clearly, the country's trading partners all over the world take issue with that notion. I mean, for example, we even saw this week the South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, pointing out that you can't possibly argue that some of the produce from his country, some of the products are national security threats. As he pointed out, you know, they don't grow citrus in the United States year round, so they have to rely on foreign importers for some of those seasonal goods like South Africa. But
sorry to interrupt you, Simon, on this, though. So is the national security, this section 232 method of looking at the imposition of tariffs, is that because Trump can do this through the White House rather than going through Congress and doing it through the framework of a trade deal?
Well, that's what he's arguing. Remember, all of this is still subject to legal challenges, and he's won some cases and lost some cases already as various appeals continue to work their way through, particularly already over the tariffs that he's imposed on Mexico and Canada. But this is part and parcel of an ever-expanding presidential executive power grab that Donald Trump is engaged in. And as you correctly point out, completely bypassing Congress, not even bothering to try and secure congressional backing in any kind of vote for these measures. There are members of Congress, of course, particularly the Democrats, but some Republicans that take issue with all of that. But the White House strategy is absolutely clear, absolutely determined. And at the moment, there is no indication that anything is going to turn him to wander down a different path.
And is there any pushback in America where the cost of healthcare is already phenomenal? The cost of drugs, it's often complained that drugs manufactured abroad and sold in America are sold at a very high cost. Slapping a 250% tariff on those drugs and potentially hitting people's health insurance policies and their pockets, has that caused any concern domestically?
Well, we've already seen the passage and signing into law of his so-called Big Beautiful Bill on tax and spending, which the Congressional Budget Office says is going to throw 10 million Americans off health insurance. It is now the law of the land. So there will be, obviously, pushback, particularly from Democrats, who say that this is going to lead to vast challenges for sick and elderly Americans in particular, who rely on imported pharmaceuticals. But the pharmaceutical industry, like so many other corporates, is in a bind here. Donald Trump hasn't even reached the first year of his four in his second term in office. They know they're going to be dealing with him for at least the next 3 years to come, and potentially with his MAGA movement for longer than that. He spoke yesterday about J.D. Vance perhaps succeeding him as the leader of the MAGA movement. And so for industry, whether it's pharmaceuticals, semiconductors or anything else, I mean, there has to be a really difficult conversation taking place about whether you simply accept that you are going to have to move some of that production here to the United States to satiate his worst instincts on these duties.
Right. Speaking of the MAGA movement, something that has caused divisions within it is the case of the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Former US President Bill Clinton and his wife Hillary have been sent a legal subpoena from a congressional committee investigating Epstein. What can you tell us about what the committee's looking into and why the Clintons have been called?
Yeah, this is a double-edged sword, this story. It's the House Oversight Committee, and the Republicans leading it secured support for a whole variety of former officials, including Bill and Hillary Clinton, to be subpoenaed to come and testify before them about what they know about Jeffrey Epstein. And, of course, we know that Bill Clinton had a close friendship with Jeffrey Epstein, travelled on numerous occasions in Epstein's private jet to the private island that Epstein Epstein owned in the Caribbean. And one of the reasons why Democrats have been so concerned about where this Epstein story may eventually lead is because they are deeply concerned about what the Epstein files, the documents, may contain about the nature of his relationship with Bill Clinton, never mind the nature of his relationship with Donald Trump. The reason this is a double-edged sword for the White House is because, as well as subpoenaing the Clintons, which sort of grabbed the headlines, enough Republicans on the committee sided with Democrats and said that they were also going to send a subpoena to the Department of Justice, Donald Trump's Department of Justice, ordering the Department of Justice, legally compelling them to release all the files that so far have not, despite Donald Trump's pledges on the campaign trail last year, emerged from the building. And that is a reflection of the enormous anger that is growing among Donald Trump's core supporters, who say, you said you were going to offer full transparency over the Epstein documents. Now you're not. Whatever is in them and whatever it says about you, Mr. President, those documents need to be released. So for Donald Trump, it was good news in the sense that he can continue trying to deflect blame and pointing fingers at top Democrats, including the Clintons. But it's also a real political problem for him because the Department of Justice now has to decide how to respond to that subpoena and whether it is going to release any files as a result of it.
And meanwhile, who else is in the subpoena dragnet to be called in front of the committee?
Well, interestingly, top Democrats, including the former Attorney General Merrick Garland, who, of course, was Joe Biden's Attorney General, the Republicans will want to question him about why he did nothing to get to the bottom of the Jeffrey Epstein issue while he was in office. But also some former Republican officials, including Donald Trump's Attorney General from his first term, Bill Barr, and his predecessor, Jeff Sessions. And both of them will be targeted by Democrats on the committee and possibly by some Republicans who want to understand why there was so little interest in successive governments in trying to understand precisely where all the tentacles of Jeffrey Epstein's various activities, including sex trafficking, may have led.
And when will all of this begin? It's within weeks, is it?
Well, they are projecting a tremendous amount of strength and alacrity here, with the Republican chair of the committee insisting that he wants the Clintons dragged before the committee by the end of this month. I mean, there will be now considerable negotiation underway with many of these witnesses. I mean, ultimately, they are legally compelled to testify unless they can strike some kind of a deal with the committee. And those deals could take a while to work out. So I think that the calendar they've published of tremendous activity over the next 4, 8, 12 weeks is inevitably going to get pushed back. But they are absolutely determined to make these hearings happen.
All right. Box office hearings there. But finally, President Trump recently unveiled a plan he's been thinking about for years. Apparently, the White House is getting a 90,000 square foot ballroom. Here's the White House Press Secretary, Caroline Leavitt, talking about it.
For 150 years, presidents, administrations, and White House staff have longed for a large event space on the White House complex that can hold substantially more guests than currently allowed.
All right. The big ballroom, a bill of how much opulent gold leaf design? What's the size of the bill, do we know, Simon?
$200 million is going to be spent on this. And Colm, you will not be surprised to discover that the source of the funding is somewhat opaque, with Donald Trump indicating that he's going to put some of the money up. But it's also apparent that there will be big money donors who put money up for this 90,000 square foot ballroom. Whether the identities of those donors are ever released and whether there is full transparency over this is, I think, a very open question, given the extent to which Donald Trump has gone beyond any former president of the United States in monetizing the power of his office. There are also massive structural issues about whether they can get this thing built in time for Donald Trump's departure from the building. Remember, though, that this is part of a much broader plan that is already underway, significantly to remake the White House in Mar-a-Lago's image. You already have seen the pictures of all the gold leaf in the Oval Office now. They've paved over Jackie Kennedy's Rose Garden. It's now basically a courtyard. They have all sorts of other plans for renovations. They've put those huge flagpoles with massive American flags now.
Right, we could have a Freudian field day analysing that move here on air, but yes. we might leave that one till after the watershed.
Yes, absolutely. But his ambition appears to be unbound to change the building in his image. He can pretty much go ahead and do it because it is exempt from some of the regulations that apply to other federal buildings. There's simply a committee that has to oversee his plans, okay, which is one of the reasons why they could pave the Rose Garden over so quickly. I suspect any incoming Democrat will pledge to reverse the changes that he's made.
Well, start getting those Liberace threads made up for yourself now, Simon Marks. Who knows when you'll be taking a twirl on the 90,000 square foot dance floor. All right, Simon Marks, chief correspondent with Feature News Story. Thanks very much for joining us on that. Coming up, vet Niamh Fagan. Get your questions into us. 0870 32 32 32.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.